There we go. We can warm up.
Yeah, no, it's recording now.
We're hot. Live.
We're live.
We're hot.
We're hot and live.
That's what my wife says.
It's a live, hot situation.
Hot and live. Right in your face.
So how you been, Bill?
Good.
Good.
Thanks for calling me.
Yeah, it's been a little bit. You know, we
should do this more. I think I say that every time.
Yeah, I agree. Now, here's the thing. All right.
Okay.
So, latest episode of the podcast has been my conversation with Glenn Gordon Caron, the guy who created the moonlighting.
And stuff.
So that's been a really, really cool episode.
It's cool to talk to him.
Yeah, really good response.
Awesome.
Things like that. So I got to tell you though. Oh, you know what? Welcome to the Dana Buckler Show.
Thanks,
I just realized I haven't done the introduction. So hello everyone, and welcome to the Dana Buckler Show. My name is Dana. My guest in studio is the one and only Bill Searcy. Welcome back, Bill.
Thanks, Dana. Thanks for having me. Good to be here. Yeah. I missed you all out there.
Yeah, I know. So we're recording on a gorgeous day in February here in Florida. I mean,
it's beautiful.
High 76 today. I mean, you can't get any better.
Golf ball was flying today.
I had
the blue skies.
Had the convertible nice. Top down on the car. Just
the
just
wind kind of, flowing through your flux,
yeah,
golden
just,
flux.
Just zooming along, cool. Having a great time. You know, Bill, I want to tell you, I called you. This is kind of an emergency episode, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. There was a little bit of
there's
hey,
urgency.
Let's meet.
Yeah, there's urgency.
Yeah, this
in my
wasn't
voice.
A let's plan. This was a come on over.
I said, listen, we've got a situation going on here, and I'll go ahead and set up some context for this episode. A couple days ago, my lovely girlfriend Jessie and I were hanging around the house. We were kind of making plans for the weekend. We had family coming over on Sunday.
Okay.
You know, that's a nice time. And then she said, you know, what are you going to do on Monday? And I said, I don't know what we're going to do on Monday. I said, you know, probably going to record a podcast episode, pretty standard fare for Mondays. She goes, let's go to a movie afterwards. And I said, you know what? Yes, let's go to a movie.
It's been a while.
The last time I've been to the movies was to see Oppenheimer. And that was July of last year.
Wow.
So it's been a while.
You used to go, you know,
three times a week.
Yeah, you've told us before. Three times a week.
Never missed it.
Got it.
And so I decided, yeah, let's go to a movie. So I open up the app on my phone and I pull up both movie theaters that are available to us. There's the good old Regal Cinema, still kicking.
Still plugging away.
Cannot explain why that place is still open. They must own the land. There's no other explanation. And then the Epic Theater, which is a chain of movie theaters in the southeastern United States. I think they've got 16 or 17, you know, between Georgia, Florida, and Texas. Great movie theater.
It's nice.
Great
it's
experience.
Nice.
It's what you'd think. All the bells and whistles, the reclining chairs, the whole nine, good sound system. Did I tell you the time I went to see a movie there, not to go on a side tangent, I went to go see the movie Air with Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, also the story about the Michael Jordan shoes,
Jordans. I know, yeah, but I don't remember the story.
I went to go see Air in the theater. I went to go see it at Epic, and it was in one of their DCP
whatever
their equivalent of IMAX was.
Right.
And I get in there, and I'm the only one in the theater. And I'm loving that. It's like 11 a.m. on a random Wednesday. And right before the lights go down, two couples come in. And I would say they were probably in their mid-60s. You know, retirees, just catching an afternoon movie. No harm, no foul, no big deal. They're sitting maybe six rows in front of me. But when you're at Epic Theater, it doesn't matter. Because there's nothing is obstructing your view. Everything is like levels. Like Kramer wanted to do with his apartment. Levels. Okay.
Yeah, they'd have to be like 8 feet tall.
Yeah, they'd have to be Harry and the Hendersons.
But that could happen to you, though. I mean, I could see that happening.
If it's possible to happen to someone, it would be me. But I'm sitting there, and the lights go down, and the trailers start, and I'm just saying to myself, loud. This is great. Like, it's really loud.
The volume.
Even the trailers, like, the walls are shaking. I'm like, this is awesome. I'm like, this is, you know what? This is what I paid my $9 for,
yeah.
You know, for a matinee.
Like louder than loud.
Louder than loud.
Really loud.
Really good. Okay. Really good. What you'd expect with an IMAX or their version of an IMAX. So the trailers play. And after each trailer ended, I could hear the ladies that were part of this couple go, that's really loud.
Oh,
that's really loud. I don't know if I can do this. And so the movie starts. Did you see Air?
I still haven't. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, this is
I should watch this, right?
This is not a spoiler to say that the movie opens up to Dire Straits' Money for Nothing. And if you're familiar with the way that song starts, it has sort of an intro that builds to a crescendo into like a guitar solo.
Yep.
And so it's like you hear like the little drums.
That's awesome.
But it's building up to the credits. And when it drops, I mean, it hits.
Wow.
It hits. And I'm just like, yeah. And I can't help but notice that one of the ladies gets up and she exits the theater. And 2 minutes later, it's like they cut the volume by 75% to the point where I was struggling to hear dialogue in the theater. And I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yep.
Like, is this the world we're living in now where one person can change the experience for everyone else? Like, now, mind you, we're the only ones in there.
Well, one person's 20% of the
But the people. Exactly. But imagine this was a crowded movie theater.
Right.
You know, like, wait.
That sucks.
And so, and I just decided right then and there, I said, you know what? I have fought enough battles in movie theaters over the years.
Yes, you have.
I'm too old. I'm too tired.
You didn't even go to the manager.
I'm too tired. You know, I can't do this anymore. I've exhausted myself. This is a prime example of why I don't like going to the movies anymore. So I grabbed my 3/4 full bag of popcorn, what's left of my soda, and I got up and I started walking out. And as I was walking down the stairs, walking past this couple, the lady goes, "Excuse me, sir." I said, "Yes." She goes, "Could you tell the manager to turn it up a little bit?" And I looked at her and I said, "Madam, I will do no such thing."
Yes.
I said, "This is a DLP or whatever it is." I said it correctly. "This is a DLP theater.
Yep.
It's supposed to be loud. Good day to you." And I walked out and I got in my car and I said, I'm done. And then the more I thought about it, it was kind of a turning point for me. I said, you know, I'm in my 40s. I'll be 46 this year. And if I had been in my 40s in the 80s or the 90s, it would have been the golden era for me to go to the theater.
Yeah.
But not movie theaters, but Hollywood as a whole, the big movie studios, they've decided that you, that myself, that anyone that's 35 and above, we don't matter anymore. We don't matter. It doesn't matter. We're not the audience anymore.
Who is it?
The audience is teenagers and very young adults who have now been conditioned to expect something they're familiar with. And we could spend hours, you know, dissecting how we got here.
Right.
But a perfect example would be the Spider-Man No Way Home movie that came out a couple years ago. The big selling point on that was it was all the villains and all the Spider-Mans from the previous Spider-Man movies. Andrew Garfield was in it, Tobey Maguire. And it was like people were cheering when they would come on screen. And I'm like, what about something new? What about something fresh? Why are we like, why is everything? I remember this. I remember that. I'm like, there was a time when you could go to the movie theater and you'd see an original story and there was a lot of options for adults.
Right.
There's still options for adults, but they're not in the movie theater anymore. They're on Amazon. They're on Netflix.
They're like series. They're just like eight episode series.
And yeah, it just
not it, a movie.
It made I wouldn't even want to say it made me nostalgic, but it made me want to do an episode called "When Movies Were Movies," and that's what we're going to discuss. We're going to pick some movies that came out in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s, and we're going to kind of talk about how, when these films came out, they were for adults.
Right.
And they had compelling, interesting storylines. You know, a great movie will have you live vicariously through the main character's shoes for 2 hours. Spend a couple hours in this person's life.
Sure.
Movies today don't want you to do that. They just want you to be entertained by CGI nonsense and I remember that and remember this and there's nothing original anymore. So
yeah, not a lot. Like, no, you might get one or two come by, but most of it, you're right. Yeah,
look,
I agree.
You should look. Let me, I wrote something down here. All right. I was curious the other day. So I decided that I wanted to look at the year I turned 18, 1996, pivotal time for me when it comes to movies.
Right.
I moved out on my own. I got a little apartment. It was within walking distance of a multiplex. And I wrote down the top 10 highest grossing movies in America in 1996. Now, of the top 10, only one is a remake. Everything else is pretty much an original story and idea.
Yep.
Now, it doesn't mean that some of these didn't get sequels, but at the time, they weren't planned franchises. They were, you went to the movies, you saw a movie, beginning, middle, and end, and it was done. All right?
No.
Number 10 on that list.
Okay.
A Time to Kill.
Yep.
Matthew McConaughey, Samuel L. Jackson, Sandra Bullock. Heavy, heavy subject matter. Rated R.
It's a book?
Based on a John Grisham book. Have you ever seen Time to Kill?
Of course, yeah.
Yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell. That fucking, that was a top 10 movie in 1996. A top 10 movie. That movie wouldn't even get a theatrical release today.
Right.
That would be an 8-episode series on Netflix or Max or whatever streaming service. Number 9 was The Birdcage.
That's the best.
Robin Williams, Nathan Lane, Gene Hackman, Diane Weiss.
That's a unique script for right?
That is based off of a play, a French play called La Cage aux Folles.
So good.
From the 70s. I challenge anyone that hasn't watched The Birdcage before, watch it. It's so funny.
Like headache funny because you laugh so much. Great movie.
Time to Kill, rated R. The Birdcage, rated R.
Yep.
In movies for adults. Number 8. The Nutty Professor. Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Okay, his big comeback movie. You know, because remember,
he went away for a while.
After coming to America, he's going to direct a movie called Harlem Nights, which at the time of its release wasn't well received, but by today's standards, I think is an excellent film.
Yeah, exactly. That's one that just didn't hit the time.
It was
before its time. Like, I don't think people appreciated it.
It wasn't following the typical Eddie Murphy formula.
Right, and that's,
you know, which was him playing 10 different characters, you know.
Being funny.
It was a comedy, but it was a little bit more serious in its tone. And then he does Boomerang, which, again, people love now, wasn't well received. He did a movie called The Distinguished Gentleman, which was directed by Jonathan Lynn, who directed My Cousin Vinny, I think is actually a pretty good movie.
Oh, yeah.
Then he does Metro and Police Academy. Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Yeah.
That wasn't good.
No.
That wasn't good. You know there's a new Beverly Hills Cop movie coming out.
It's
called Axel Beverly Hills Axel F or Axel Foley. The trailer looked good.
Yeah, I think it might come all the way back to being good. I would hope he wouldn't do something that late and it'd be bad.
I'll tell you this. But it's a Netflix movie.
Yeah,
it's
not
even going to be in the theater.
Well, that's what kind of stinks.
Yeah.
But I'm optimistic because a lot of this, I watch a ton of streaming stuff. Some of the Netflix movies, they're good.
Yeah.
They're well done. They're putting out good content. It's just a lot of content. But
then he bounces back with The Nutty Professor. It's a good movie.
It's funny.
Really, really funny. Number 6 was 101 Dalmatians. This is the live action. People are talking about Disney does live action versions of all their animated films. That's not a new thing. They were doing this back in the 90s. Sure. Glenn Close playing Cruella DeVille.
Yeah, it's good.
Number five, this is the fifth highest grossing movie in America in 1996. R-rated, heavy, heavy movie, Ransom.
Oh, wow.
Mel Gibson, yes. Rene Russo, Gary Sinise, directed by Ron Howard.
So good.
Good, but you see, like A Time to Kill, Ransom, these movies.
It's all rated R in the movie. You don't see it.
They would not be released today. We didn't realize how good we had it back then. We took this for granted.
Right.
We didn't think the well was ever going to dry up. Number 4, Jerry Maguire, another R-rated movie.
I love Jerry Maguire.
Jerry Maguire's fantastic.
So good.
I mean, it's just...
That is so good.
So then we get into the top 3, all right? Number 3 on the list, Mission Impossible. Your first one.
First one.
Directed by Brian De Palma. I mean, it was an entertaining movie.
No, that's a story. I mean, that's not unique story.
That's not a unique story.
But what a kickoff to a franchise on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And still has one of the coolest sequences when he comes down with the wires that was wild. Number two, a movie that I'm frankly surprised didn't get a sequel until this year, Twister.
I saw that.
Yeah, during the Super Bowl.
Did I see that during Super Bowl?
Yeah,
Twisters.
Twisters, yeah.
Is it got to be a kid from, is it a family member connected?
I mean, they're using the same machines in there, you know, the Dorothy.
I saw that Dorothy. You know? Yeah. I saw that. But I actually love Twister.
Twister is.
I love Twister so much.
Perfectly fine for what it is.
Exactly.
It was a fun movie.
It's fun.
And then the number one movie.
God, Twister is so big.
Of 1996. Again, I want to stress, it was Independence Day, okay? But that wasn't a sequel, a prequel, a remake.
Right.
That was Roland Emmerich making a movie after he did Stargate. He did Universal Soldier, then he did Stargate. And then the studio says, what else? He goes, well, I want to do my version of an alien invasion movie.
Yep.
All right, do it.
It was huge. Obviously, it's number one.
That's
huge.
A massive movie. Like, if you watch that film today, I think people are going to be in awe of just, like, how many characters are in that film?
Right.
Now, I've gone on record, people don't have to email me or call me out, of saying that the movie is good up until the actual, when the aliens attack. Then I think it kind of falls off a cliff a little bit. But that was just 1 year.
But see, the example is that, I know, and it's amazing to look back at that list that you just went through and talking about R-rated movies and adult movies. And that's the top movies, right? There's a couple of family movies in there, right? But it is impressive that they're all R. Like, you just don't see that these days. But my takeaway is when you hear, like, the week one of Independence Day, right? When you hear that the first people that went to see it, that back then people would go, you have to go to the movies to see that, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Now no one says that. Now nobody in the world goes, you need to go to the movies to see that. They don't say that anymore.
No.
But back then, you were looking for times to go, you know, that next week or whatever. That was fun to me. And you just don't get that now anymore.
By comparison, here are the top 10 grossing films of last year. Okay?
Oh, wow.
All right. And this is worldwide, okay?
At movie theater?
In movie theaters. Okay. These are the highest grossing films. I want you to tell me how many of these you actually saw in the theater.
Okay, heard. Let's go.
Number 10 was Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania.
No.
Okay. Number 9 was Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, the 6th or 7th movie in that franchise.
Probably not at the movie, no.
Number 8 was The Little Mermaid. Live action remake.
No, what year is this?
This is last year.
Oh, okay.
This is 2023.
Oh, so Mission Impossible, yes.
The new Mission Impossible.
That's the new one.
Yeah,
yes, new one.
Yeah,
of course I did. Okay. Sorry, yes.
All right. Number 7, Wonka.
That just came out.
Yeah, it came out last year. Technically, it came out in December.
Yeah, I took cash.
Okay.
Yeah, I took my son.
Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Took my son.
Okay. Fast X.
No way.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Took my son.
Okay. Oppenheimer.
No.
The Super Mario Brothers movie.
Took my son.
Okay. Barbie.
No.
Okay. So.
So the theme there is, daddy and son, let's get out of the house. Kid,
you took your son to the movies.
I would not have gotten to see any of them except Mission Impossible.
Exactly. So it's just an interesting time we live in. And I'm going to be honest with you. Over the past 4 years since the pandemic, all right, through kind of no fault of their own. I mean, the pandemic obviously changed a lot of things and in some cases permanently changed them. But movie-going audiences have been conditioned to watch things at home. And the studios are not doing anything to change that.
No, they're on a path now. Because they're giving it to you streaming. So why even go?
Do you know what the last movie, it came out in 2022, the last film that it was like a collective experience where everybody was going to see the movie. Do you know
Avatar?
What it was?
I don't know.
No. Maverick. Top Gun Maverick.
Okay, Maverick. Yeah. Right, right.
That was one where young and old, everybody was going to see that movie.
Because, and you heard that. People go, you have to go to the theater.
That was the last
time. But it stopped. That was it. It didn't keep going.
It hadn't happened in years.
Right. And nothing except maybe Avatar was at another one. Let go. But no. And we all went. I remember that day.
Yeah, that was fun, right? Absolutely. We had a great time.
But you had to go to the theater to see that.
Yeah.
And it was amazing.
Yeah.
Just like old times.
It really was. I went and saw it a few times in the theater.
Yeah, so cool.
That was a great time.
That was the best.
But that's the exception to the rule. That just doesn't happen anymore. So, Bill, what I wanted to do was, for our younger listeners out there, I just jotted down a few movies that I just want to, you know, mention. These were all successful films in the theater. They were all rated R. Okay.
Yeah.
And they were all geared towards adults. And I think that if you're, you know, if you're the younger generation, you want to know what it was like to go to the movies, I recommend these films. Check these out. These were popular movies. In one case, the Best Picture winner of 1988. And these films, these are examples of, these are six movies that will never see a theatrical release ever again. As far as if they made a movie similar to this, a movie like this will never, ever be in the movie theater again.
I definitely have a few for you.
Okay.
Can't wait to hear your list. What year?
So I'm a little all over the place here.
Okay.
I've got three from the 80s, one from the 70s, one from the 90s. All right.
I have some too, if I can share them later.
Absolutely. But I wanted to go ahead and just put together, and they're all wildly different than each other. You know?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, but here's the criteria. Okay.
Okay.
R-rated.
Oh, okay.
R-rated.
Right.
Successful, financially successful, and made for adults. And big theatrical films.
Ready. Can't wait.
Okay, ready? 1988, Rain Man.
I was just going to write that down.
Okay, Rain Man. Tom Cruise, Dustin Hoffman.
Maybe one of the best movies.
One of the highest grossing films of that year. It is, for those who don't know, Rain Man is a story of Tom Cruise plays a hotshot exotic car dealer who has a strange relationship with his father. His father passed away. He goes back to Ohio for the funeral. When he finds out that he's been left out of his father's estate, valued at close to $3 million, that it's been left, you know, to someone else, that someone else turns out to be his autistic brother, who he didn't even know he had, played by Dustin Hoffman. And it becomes a road trip where at first, Tom Cruise he doesn't kidnap him, but he takes his brother from the hospital and travels to California, road trip to California in a way of trying to figure out how to get that $3 million. And then a bond develops between them. I don't want to say anything more than that, but
don't they meet the director at the end of the movie?
Yes, they
do. He's in it, right?
Yeah. He plays sort of the arbitrator, of when they're trying to figure out who's going to get custody.
I love when directors sneak themselves in.
I don't want to spoil anything, but it's a fantastic movie.
I agree.
And it won Best Picture that year. Dustin Hoffman won the Academy Award for Best Actor for that movie. And it's
amazing.
I hope it's not lost to the sands of time. It showed up on YouTube the other day.
Really?
You know, YouTube, if you got YouTube Premium, they got a lot of movies to watch.
And how does it pop up? Like, what does that mean?
They have a whole list of movies that you can watch, like on YouTube. And
if you had to pick 10 or 20 movies that, like, if you were stuck, that would be the only 20 you could see for the rest of your life. That could be in that 20.
It's a possibility. Yeah.
It's that good.
Really good. And I don't want to spoil it again, but there's a scene where they go to Las Vegas, you know, and they come up with a scheme to make a little bit of extra money.
Smart.
And it's real. It's parodied in The Hangover. The Hangover does an homage to that scene.
They do.
Yeah, but if you want to see it for real, watch it in
The Escalator.
Rain Man. Yeah,
the Escalator.
Come down the Escalator.
Oh,
yeah,
so good.
So Rain Man. There's one right there.
I love it. I'm a huge fan.
All right, here's another one. Came out the next year, 1989. Glory.
Okay.
Matthew Broderick.
Yep.
All right. Denzel Washington. Morgan Freeman.
American Civil War.
It was a story about the first African-American regiment for the Union, the 54th out of Massachusetts. And Matthew Broderick plays Colonel Robert Gould Shaw.
Matthew Broderick,
yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, he plays a...
I don't remember that.
It's a phenomenal
I mean,
film.
I know the movie, but I forgot
directed by Edward Zwick, who, by the way, just released his autobiography. It's called Hits, Flops, and Other Illusions. I just finished it the other day. Phenomenal book.
Really?
If you're interested in the, you know, some insider stories of what it's like, you know, what it's like to make a movie, he's got some hell of some stories. Oh, and he, cool. Listen, he directed About Last Night, Glory, Legends of the Fall, you know, The Siege, Last Samurai, Blood Diamond. This guy's made some movies, you know, but he.
Real ones, real movies.
Real movies. Real movies. I might add. But when you watch Glory, again, it's an incredible story. I do not want to spoil it because it is a very solemn story, but everything in that film is done practically. You know, this is 89, right. You know, and it's epic in some parts, and it is pretty astounding.
And what year was that?
89.
Okay.
And Denzel Washington wins Best Supporting Actor for his role. That's the movie that kind of introduced the world to Denzel.
Denzel's the best.
And he's incredible, and he's got a shaved head in the movie, too. It's really...
See, I think I was 14.
Yeah.
And that's why I probably didn't catch it. Too heavy, too R-rated. That was, you know, that like you said, adult movie.
Yeah.
Right? That's probably why I missed
it. I hope
that.
You'll give it a rewatch.
I will.
All right? 1986, Stand By Me. Okay?
Another unbelievable.
How do unbelievable. We not have any more movies like this? A coming-of-age story taking place in the 1950s, narrated by Richard Dreyfuss, does an exceptional job. Okay, based on a book by Stephen King, directed by Rob Reiner. All right, Rob Reiner, listen to this run, okay?
Legend.
This is Spinal Tap, Stand By Me, The Princess Bride, When Harry Met Sally, Misery, A Few Good Men. In that order.
It's amazing. What a run.
What a run.
Wasn't he in Archie Bunker?
He was. He was Meathead.
Meathead.
He was.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
You know, what an incredible run.
That guy's a legend.
I watched Stand By Me probably about a month ago. And I'm just watching it. And
it's the best.
We are from that generation before the internet, before the technological revolution, where being out with your friends was more important than being home.
Just walking down the railroad.
Yep, just doing whatever. And this movie does a brilliant job of sort of capturing that the lost innocence of it was like.
The 80s, like if you grew up in the 80s, maybe early 90s, you still connected to the 70s and 60s, right?
That's why the movie Dazed and Confused still resonates with me.
Right.
Because I'm in high school when that movie comes out, and that movie is really only takes place 15 years, takes place in 76. I'm in high school when that movie comes out, and that's what they're doing in Dazed and Confused is exactly what we were doing when we were in high school. That's fashion's a little bit different.
When I was little, I was born in 1974, but when I was little, I remember one of our TVs was like kind of a crappy little TV.
Yeah.
It was black and white.
Yeah.
So like the TV, like even though regular TV wasn't black and white, we had a TV that wasn't color.
Yeah.
Sitting in the corner there by the kitchen. And we would watch some crappy, you know, TV shows, but it was black and white. Like, that's why I think if you grew up in the 80s, you're still connected with, you know, this older generation. Now, forget about it.
The thing is, I've talked to some of the people I work with that are in their 20s, and they say stuff like, I just can't imagine what it must have been like back then, not to not have this, to not have that, to not have your phone.
Just a phone. Having a phone.
I'm like, it's hard for me to explain to them that we didn't have any perception of what that was. So we didn't feel like we were missing out. You know, when I was 16 years old, I wasn't sitting there saying to myself, God, I'd love to be able to watch TikTok right now. None of that shit existed. We didn't have any frame of reference for that.
I was looking for that 6-pound phone book so I could go find a business or a pizza place.
100 years from now, people are going to look back at our time and say, how on earth did they ever function with whatever gizmos they're going to have there? They're also going to look at our medical practices and procedures 100 years from now and call us barbaric.
Yep, exactly.
You mean you actually had humans do the operations?
Yeah, right. Jeez. We're getting old.
So another one, 1987. I just can't do these in chronological order.
Yeah,
okay?
Fine.
Wall Street. Come on.
Yeah, amazing.
Wall Street, Michael Douglas, Charlie Sheen, Daryl Hannah, directed by Oliver Stone. His follow-up to Platoon. He makes Platoon the definitive Vietnam movie, and then the following year does Wall Street, sort of the first time we get a real insider's look at Wall Street, the yuppie generation. And it's incredible. The performances. Again, Michael Douglas wins an Academy Award for his performance.
Yeah, what's his name?
Right? Okay, so his name was Gordon Gekko.
Oh, yeah, Gordon Gekko, okay? Right, yeah.
And for those who remember the movie, so basically, I don't want to spoil it too much, but so Gordon Gekko plays this hot shot, you know, he manages a big firm, a big investment firm, and all the new traders out there, they want to go to work for him, and Charlie Sheen plays Bud Fox. He's an up-and-coming Wall Street trader, and he's been trying for months to get a meeting with Gordon Gekko. He finally gets that meeting. Long story short is he basically starts giving Gordon Gekko insider information, like insider trading, like stuff that's illegal. But what's great about it is the contact that would always call Charlie Sheen, his nickname was Blue Horseshoe. And so the fun one is Blue Horseshoe loves Anacott Steel.
I love it. Right. That was his tip or whatever.
That was the tip.
So I just one thing on Oliver Stone. When he makes a movie, he goes all in. It's a topic. Like, it's a thing. Like, you know, any given Sunday, like, he just goes all in. I mean,
he's going to show you a world.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. And he's going to go in depths that nobody else is
like,
gone.
If you look at I actually have his autobiography. I read a lot of biographies of directors, and his biography on. His autobiography, if you watch Platoon, it is a snapshot of what it was like for him when he was in Vietnam. Like the characters, Tom Berenger's character and Willem Dafoe's character, those were based off of real people that he interacted with in Vietnam. So he's going to give you a really interesting look at it. Then he's going to do a movie like Born on the 4th of July. Right?
Dude, he's all in. That's deep. Oh,
JFK. Man.
Yeah, exactly. I
mean, natural born killers.
Whatever topic he wants to tackle, he's tackling in full force.
Yeah,
he goes all in. And did you think we'll ever see anything else from him? Or
well, I mean, he's in his 70s now. Yeah. He's still pretty active. I mean, he was on Joe Rogan not too long ago. Like he's still doing stuff. He's been producing a ton of documentaries lately. Okay. He just did another one on JFK. That's his bread and butter.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
So, but Wall Street, phenomenal film. They made a sequel, which wasn't great.
Yeah. I love when they do a sequel and it's just Wall Street 2.
Yeah. Well, this one's called Wall Street Money Never Sleeps.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was all right.
Exactly.
It wasn't great. It was rated PG-13. It wasn't great.
See, they should have made it Wall Street 2. Just kidding.
Yeah. No. Wall Street.
Wall Street.
With an S with a dollar sign.
Wall Roads.
1994, True Lies. We were just talking about this before we were recording.
Yes.
Why did I put True Lies on this list? Because...
Is that rated R?
It's rated R. It's a rated R action movie for adults.
Yes.
And it was a hugely successful film in 1994. It was also, I will make the argument, the last great Arnold Schwarzenegger action film.
Wow.
The last great one.
Yes.
All right? Because if you think about it, well, before I go into what he did afterwards, I mean, this is a James Cameron directed movie.
He wrote it too, right?
He wrote it. He directed it. All right. It's funny as hell.
Yeah.
But still has some incredible over the top practical stunt work. Like that whole scene where the Harriers destroy the bridge.
That was gunfire. That was real.
That was incredible.
Yes.
Just incredible.
In the Keys. That's what, 7 Mile Bridge or whatever.
They set off a nuclear bomb in the Florida Keys. It's like the thing about James Cameron movies that I always appreciate is he goes for it.
The horse in the elevator. So I sent you the picture. Yeah. I was just in that hotel for a work meeting in LA a couple weeks ago, and it says on the sign like True Lies or whatever. So those elevators, they're all colored. So there's 5 elevators in that hotel, a blue tower, a green tower.
Was this in like the downtown part of L.A.?
Yeah. Right downtown, near the old Staples Center. Now that's, crypto whatever. So I watched the movie while we were, while I was there, like in the room that night after I got back from the bar. And I watched half of it just because I wanted to see the scene with the horse. He's in the red elevator. So I just went over to the red tower just to ride it because that was the one.
And they're on the side of the building, the elevator.
Yeah, in the movie too. It's a Westin. I don't know if it was a Marriott, at least in the movie, because he's hanging off the damn sign up at top. But
Isn't that a little fun camera trickery? Because it's supposed to be Washington, D.C.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so, but he actually shot that in L.A.
And he's near that other famous building that you went and saw, too.
Which one?
Nakatomi
Plaza, yeah.
So it's pretty cool. L.A.'s got some good history down there.
I say True Lies is the last great Arnold Schwarzenegger action film, and I stand by that. You know, after True Lies, he's going to do a movie called Eraser that comes out in 96. All right.
I still went to see that.
I saw that in the theater. I went and saw it. Liked it, didn't love it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It wasn't as good as this.
The CGI alligators just really...
Weird laser, but they were... Yeah, I get what they were doing.
They were trying something different.
Yeah, they were doing.
And then after that, he does a couple of End of Days, The Sixth Day, you know, The Sixth Man, or whatever it was called. Those were not great. Then he does a movie called Collateral Damage, which...
I still watched them, but they weren't as good. I guarantee.
Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines. No.
What was the one that he did?
And then he became governor for 8 years.
Yeah, what a life this guy lived.
Yeah.
What a life. What a cool guy. The biggest flop was Last Action Hero?
Yeah, now here's the thing about Last Action Hero.
How is that? Should I go watch that again?
So Last Action Hero comes out. So
it was kind of cheesy, I think.
So listen, and I don't have any notes in front of me, guys, so I'm just...
He never does.
I'm just trying to pull some of this out from memory, okay? So Last Action Hero is the movie that comes out in between Terminator 2 and True Lies.
That's part of the problem.
Okay, and it is... directed by John McTiernan, who directed Predator and Die Hard and The Hunt for Red October. Okay.
Okay.
So no one's questioning, for those who don't
What's
know.
What's the miss?
Okay. So here's the thing. The movie, I don't know how to describe it. It's a meta movie, meaning that you get this young kid played by Austin O'Brien. He's a huge fan of this Jack Slater.
Action hero.
Played by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Right. Okay. It's a world where Arnold Schwarzenegger exists. You know, he's a real movie star.
He's playing this young
Austin O'Brien is going to the theater to watch Arnold Schwarzenegger play, you know, his favorite action character, Jack Slater.
Yes.
Jack Slater 4. And then through some movie magic,
they end up in the movie something.
Austin O'Brien ends up in the movie, and it's basically a comedy that sort of lampoons and makes fun of all the action movie tropes. And then eventually Arnold Schwarzenegger's character gets brought into the real world, and the concept sounds
awesome. I just don't think they nailed it.
I think it's a movie that was made 20 years too early.
Yeah.
I think you could do that in the 2010s.
Yeah, with all this CGI
could do it. The problem is, it has some really cool action sequences, but because the action sequences are happening in the movie, they don't feel real, and they don't feel like they've got real stakes about them.
Right.
Wildly over budget film.
Yeah, exactly.
Famously did not do well.
Yeah.
But it's not awful in its execution. It's an interesting film that I think people should watch. It was ahead of its time.
To me, I think the kid is not sellable.
No.
I think that's part of the problem, too.
They would have done better with a Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, he wasn't very good.
Yeah. So I remember seeing that movie in the theater, in 93.
I don't remember.
I was 15.
That was 93?
It was 92 or 93.
Yeah, I didn't go.
I did see that in the theater. And I remember being like super...
Disappointed
at the time because you're coming off Terminator 2, a top 10 movie of all time for me.
Schwarzenegger's in his prime.
Yeah.
He's there.
And people are saying that that Last Action Hero is going to derail his career permanently. Like he's never going to recover from it. And he hooks up with James Cameron and, it's like, no, we can still do this.
Cha-ching. Yeah. Because he was good. It wasn't
True Lies is fucking amazing. Great. But it's his last great movie.
I agree. There you go.
And by the way, that movie is celebrating 30 years this year. I'm doing it for dinner and a movie 2 weeks.
I saw that.
So I'm excited.
So Jamie Lee Curtis.
She's amazing in the film.
That's the scene in the bedroom scene.
Just amazing.
And she's hilarious. She's funny in that too. It's funny Bill it's Paxton, funny that it's funny.
Bill Paxton.
Oh, and Tom Arnold steals the show. I think we both agree.
Like, yeah. It's a really funny movie.
It has everything an action movie should have in a spy movie.
When the action needs to get serious, it gets serious.
And you know what's cool? He writes like almost another story. It almost goes on a side story with him and his wife.
Yeah.
And then it comes back to the regular movie.
It brings it all full circle. Last one I wrote down was 1973's The Exorcist. And why did I write that one down?
Well, You've talked a lot about that.
Last year, it celebrated its 50th anniversary. I find myself watching this film at least once a year because I find it to be just a fascinating case study for how you make a horror movie with real tension and real stakes. If you watch the film, like horror movies by today's standards, they have to have a kill on screen in the first 5 minutes to get the audience hooked.
Well, Scream got that going. Yeah.
Somebody's got to die right away.
Yeah.
Nothing happens in The Exorcist for like the first 45 minutes.
And is it scary? I haven't watched
it. It just so meticulously introduces you to the characters.
Builds you up.
You get to know them. So when things start happening to them, you really feel it. Like when you're introduced to Linda Blair's character, Regan, she is just an innocent 12-year-old. And to watch her transformation as she becomes possessed, that movie came out. Fucking, what is it? 6 years before I was born, 5 years before I was born. But I love to listen to my mom tell me the stories of what it was like to go see that in the theater in 73.
Gotta be creepy.
Because we are so desensitized to, you know, graphic, you know, imagery and violence and language. That was still a relatively new thing for movie theaters, for audiences when they went to the movies. The rating system had only come out in 68, so they were just starting to make movies that you could do whatever you want,
right,
for all intents and purpose. It's still, I think, arguably one of the greatest movies ever made, and it is still arguably one of the most disturbing films you'll ever see. My girlfriend, she had never seen it. We sat down and watched it last September.
How did she take it?
Well, Jesse had said to me, I know it's going to be a good movie. There's no way it's not going to be a good movie, but I feel like 50 years removed, it's probably going to be a little dated. And I'm, you know, no. When that was over, she looked shell-shocked.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, she's like, worn out. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Because there are things that happen in that movie that you can't get away with today.
She liked it.
She loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's arguably, again, if I was to make my definitive top 10 list of the greatest films of all time, not my personal favorites, but the greatest movies ever made.
Just a movie being a movie.
That would be in the top five,
yep,
hands down. So, Bill, I know you've got a couple.
I have some.
So let's talk about some other when movies were movies.
Well, I'll say this one first. So I was just kind of flipping around and doing some research, and I kind of uncovered some rated R comedy.
Yeah.
80, just 80s?
Yeah.
I'm not even going to name one. I'm just saying that there was a ton of them. You got rated R comedies. I don't think you get a rated R comedy anymore.
If one comes out, it's the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, you might get one. I mean, there's some, but like, if you just do research and go look for rated R comedies in the 80s and 90s, there's like, you could get 100.
We went to Tennessee last weekend, and the first night we were there, we had traveled all day, so we just kind of did a night in the cabin. We made dinner and everything, and the other couple, we just put on "There's Something About Mary."
Oh, you know,
like, come on. Yeah, you talk about rated R comedy.
There you go. Yeah. There's one for sure.
It's fucking hilarious.
It's so funny. I remember leaving that one. I just had a headache. Because that's one of my headache movies. Hangover was a headache movie.
Yeah. So, rated R comedies. There's.
Well, I know. I better bring one up.
They don't exist anymore.
Well, I'll just say Stripes. I mean, I have a million of them, but Stripes is definitely one that's a rated R. And I think that's early 80s.
Directed by Ivan Reitman, Bill Murray, Harold Ramis.
John Candy.
Oh, man. Just a great, great movie.
So funny.
Sergeant Halka. You know,
he's the big thumb.
The big toe.
Big toe.
He's the big toe. You need to be our big toe. It's just, it's so good.
It's Bill Murray at his best.
That movie falls off the rails a little bit me when they finally go on the mission.
That's pretty bad. With the RV thing.
The RV.
That's silly.
But other than that, it's hilarious.
It's absolutely training, hilarious. Sir. It's a good one. But actually, that's not even on my list. Just when we got on this topic of R-rated comedies, I'm like, I just think of Stripes away. Stripes. Caddyshack.
National Lampoon's Vacation.
We could go on forever.
Animal House. These are all R-rated movies.
Yeah, but not so just 80s and 90s movies of movies that were movies, and now you won't get them. One of my favorites is Big with Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks, directed by Penny Marshall. He's nominated for an Academy Award for that role.
Yep.
You know, do you know why that movie works?
Sure, tell me, because I could tell you what I thought when I first saw the name.
I can tell you why this movie works. The reason why Big works is because there's not a single scene in the movie where anyone in the film goes, well, this is impossible. This could never happen.
Right.
What's happened to you is impossible. This has to be a trick. That never happens. Everyone who knows the secret, buy into it.
I got you.
So that's why I think that movie
works.
That's
cool. That kind of gave me chills.
Tom Hanks doesn't look in the mirror and be like, well, this is impossible. This can't really happen.
Right.
Really
they believe it happened.
It happened. It happened.
They just couldn't believe that. They thought he was kidding.
Yeah. They don't know why it happened. They don't know what the Zoltar machine is, but it happened. Now here's the movie.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that film works so well.
I love a movie for me. I mean, I love different types of movies, but one group of movies that I love is when you can laugh and cry in the same movie.
Yeah.
And this movie definitely will make me cry if I watch it again. And I could almost probably make myself cry just thinking about the movie.
What's fun about a building? I don't get it. What don't you get? Well, it's a building that turns into a robot.
Yeah, I don't.
What's fun about a building? That's so good.
But it is so good because he was an adult, he wasn't thinking like a kid. Like, oh, man.
What's fun about a building?
There's just, we could go over scene, over scene, over scene. And I don't want to do that.
What's crazy? That's a movie I probably haven't seen in 15 or 20 years. And I still remember that scene.
Yes.
Yeah, I still remember things about that film.
Chopsticks on the piano, it made Toy Stores famous again.
Yeah.
Because I think that was a KB Toys or whatever.
I can't remember exactly, but when he gets his first paycheck, and he's like, $162. He's like freaking out. He can't believe how much money it is. And John Lovitz is like, I know, they really rake you over the coals.
Yeah, he's pissed. He doesn't think it's enough. And Tom Hanks thinks it's like millions.
And they go to the bank and they're like, how do you want this? 150, 47 once. It's exactly
how a concept, a kid in an adult's body. I like when he goes to the party and he's got his get up on and he's eating like charcuterie.
Yeah, the little
corn. See, that's what actually fooled you, because that scene was in the trailer. Mm-hmm. And the movie was called Big. So originally I thought he was just a bigger person, not like an adult.
Yeah, he's just
because he's eating his little corn. I'm like, is he big? What happened? So anyway, Big's one of my favorite movies.
What's another one on your list?
I had put down Tombstone, not like an original thought, right?
But it's a Western.
Yeah.
It's R-rated.
You bring up Tombstone to anyone that's 45 to 60, they're going to say that might be one of the best movies, of their, top 10.
It's...
Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree. I remember reluctantly going to see it in the theater because at that time I didn't give a shit about Westerns.
Sure.
I mean, who gave
there was
a
some bad. There was some bad.
You have to remember, back in the 50s and 60s, the way we complain about comic book movies and superhero movies today, that's what people complained about in the 60s.
Everything was a Western.
Everything's a Western or a musical. God, that's all Hollywood. That's all Hollywood makes.
Right.
And so Westerns fell out of favor in the 70s with the new Hollywood. You get your Godfathers, the Dirty Harry. You get all these gritty movies. So the Western starts to trickle back a little bit in the 80s with Silverado or Fandango, Young Guns.
Young Guns, right.
What's the movie... Clint Eastwood.
Unforgiven.
Unforgiven.
Yeah.
And then, but none of those movies really spoke to me. And then when we went to go see, I was in high school, we went to go see Tombstone. Holy
crap.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So good.
So good.
The greatest, probably Wyatt Earp.
Yes.
Movie. And Val Kilmer is probably my favorite character that Val Kilmer ever did. I mean, he has amazing roles.
It became because the movie takes place in the 1800s, okay, it becomes instantly timeless. A movie that came out in the 90s that takes place in the 90s, when you watch it 30 years later, everything's dated. Oh, look at that fashion, all that stuff. But because the movie came out and it was a period piece, means 100 years from now, people can still watch that movie and have the same experience.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
I mean, it's phenomenal.
It builds you to the quote unquote shootout at the OK Corral.
Yeah.
Like, it builds to that. You know what's coming.
Yeah.
And it's just a ride. And it does every Western what they all wish they had. Yeah. They had everything.
And you know what? It really hasn't been captured since.
No, there's way.
Been
a not few even attempts. Close.
The 310 to Yuma was good. That was actually a remake. Magnificent Seven was good. What's the one that the Coen brothers did with Jeff Bridges? I'm losing my touch.
But you wouldn't forget Tombstone.
No, you don't forget
exactly.
Tombstone.
That's the thing. That's the
so. What's
I well when we you said 80s too I yeah. in the 80s I always go to Ferris Bueller's Day Off as one of my 80s movies, and we did a draft. I think we did, me and Dana used to do movie drafts where we'd have our own top tens, and I think Ferris Bueller's either my number one or two besides Breakfast Club.
It's again shocking that we live in a world where everything is remade and that movie hasn't had a remake.
I can't believe
like that,
that
to
Ferris
me,
Bueller.
I'm actually a little shocked, but now come to think of it, none of the John Hughes movies have gotten a remake. Maybe there's some kind of clause or in a contract or
like
something.
None of them.
Like,
and they all could easily, like Breakfast Club is another one. It would be fun to watch you, like, who are we going to pick to fill all these?
But isn't it sad that we're even talking about
this? I don't know. I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it.
Like,
I don't want to see it.
I know.
I'd rather just keep watching Breakfast Club.
I know. That I'm hopefully, I don't want it to happen, but I think you and I will live long enough to see, or to at least be in a world where they've remade both Jaws and Back to the Future.
Wow. You think so?
I think so. I think it's only inevitable that
remake Jaws
and Back to the Future.
Now, they try all these. There's a million garbage shark movies. But like just total redo.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I think it's gonna happen in our lifetime.
I hope not.
I hope not either. But it's gonna happen. Do you got another one?
Yeah. Well, speaking of drama and rated R, so I have a funny story, and then I'll tell you this movie. So, funny story of the 80s. Back when either you had, speaking of phone books and flipping through, you'd go to the phone book, find the movie theater that you're going to go to, pull up the phone number, and then call, and then sit on a recording for 10 minutes. And that thing would cycle, if you remember. So, like, it would just keep going. It wouldn't, like, start. As soon as it picks up, it doesn't start. It just... You could be in the middle of the fourth movie.
News segment, or it could be, like, the weather.
Right, you know, then you're just stuck waiting till it hits you'd hear it repeat. So it would tell you the movie and then tell you the times for that day, and then you'd have to wait. So anyway, during that time, we also sometimes would just go to the movie theater, pull up to the actual physical building, look at the sign, and then just pick a movie that way, right? Like there was no other way. Maybe you saw a commercial, but... So anyway, one time we went to the movie and it was
How old would you say you were?
I would say 13, probably 13.
Okay.
And I know that date because I used to hang out with some buddies that we played baseball with. And I think from 13 to 14, like I know that range, we would be old enough to like go to the mall.
Right.
And then from the mall, we'd go over to the parking lot where the AMC was and walk over and just pick a movie. But this time I think one of our parents dropped us off. We were going to have like boys' night out or whatever. So we're at UA Theaters,
United Artists
Theater, right? And at the time, that was a newer building. So that was like cooler to go over there than AMC just because it was newer. So we go up there. We're looking at all the signs of all the movies. And we're like, that sounds funny. Like we didn't know anything except the title sounded funny.
What was the movie?
It said My Left Foot, right? And We're like, is this a soccer movie? Like, you know, or is this just some guy that's like kicking people? We had no clue, right?
Oh my God.
Okay, so we go into this movie. Now, the listeners that don't know what it is, you could tell that, or actually the listeners that know what it was,
yeah,
you can already start laughing because 4 13-year-olds walk into this theater. We're sitting there and movie kicks on.
And I just want the record to show.
And we were late too.
So my left foot is a remarkable movie.
I won awards.
Yeah, yeah.
Daniel I think Day-Lewis, it won an award. Yeah, yeah. Or Daniel at least Day-Lewis. It was nominated.
Yeah, yeah. It's an incredible film.
Oh, it
film.
Is. It's Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, it's Daniel Day-Lewis. Right.
So super we get heavy. There super heavy. Heavy. Like really heavy. So anyway, we miss all the... we miss all the like
the credits.
Previews. Because usually previews, yeah. You'd like maybe get a hint to like what kind of subject, right? Right. If it's serious or funny. So we miss that. We just get in the movie. It's already starting. And that movie starts out literally with a left foot putting on a grabbing a record out of a holder and then putting a record on a record player and starting a record player. Now, some of our listeners don't even know what the hell a record is, but. It putting a vinyl record on, and then we're like, okay, this still can't be real. There's no way. So we hang in there, and then like the first like main scene, same shit. Like some left foot or somebody's foot is doing something, and we're like, this can't be real. So I no offense to the movie, we just got up and left. Right? We're like, this is not what 4 13-year-olds need to watch. Right? So we walk out. And we go look again, and then there's another movie that kind of sounds funny, and it was Joe vs. the Volcano.
Yeah,
so Tom Hanks again enters our life, and Meg Ryan. And that actually didn't do it for us either, but it was tolerable at the time. So,
and it's interesting because if you go back and watch Joe vs. the Volcano now, it's a great movie.
It is. It's funny. It's I like it. It's an interesting story, unique story.
I probably saw it when I was 13 years old, yeah, and it went land. Right over my head.
It did. It,
just like the Burbs did when I was a kid.
I know,
and now I think the
faves.
Burbs is absolutely hilarious.
But watching Tom Hanks try to navigate, you know, this girl in this funny thing, whatever, it was better than watching some dude, like, you know, for 3 hours move his left foot around. So anyway, there's a funny story.
Have you ever gone back to watch My Left Foot? Have you ever actually seen the movie?
No, no.
It's incredibly inspirational.
It is. I know this dude, but I later on that year, when it kind of won awards or at least was being nominated, then I'm like, oh God, that was a real movie. Like that was real.
Yeah.
So no, never went back to watch it. No offense to everyone that was part of that movie, but it just, that wasn't made for us. And my last movie that I wanted to like bring up that was R-rated, super serious, amazing movie. Again, back then, didn't know everything about all the movies, you know, that were out just because we didn't have social media. We didn't have all this stuff. I took a first date and we were like, it was like a friend's date. Like I kind of was, you know, I liked this chick. I was hoping maybe we would like be dating down the road, but we went as friends and I actually saw her at a, 30-year reunion this last summer.
Nice.
And I brought up this story.
Okay.
Unfortunately for me, she didn't remember going to this movie, but I was like, this movie was not a pick to go to a first date. Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
how deep is that?
Well, Silence of the Lambs, first of all.
Jodie Foster back on TV. I'm so pumped.
Yeah, True Detective.
I can't wait to watch that. But anyway.
So Silence of the Lambs, of course. You know, it's interesting. It's interesting you bring up Silence of the Lambs. Yeah. I get into this deep YouTube rabbit hole of watching old clips from Siskel and Ebert from their show. I found it really fascinating that they gave that movie thumbs down.
They're crazy.
They didn't like it. They liked the first part of the movie, but they said it became very formulaic.
Really?
Yeah. They said, it turns into just a monster in the house horror movie. And and I wonder, because that movie famously went on to win the big five Academy Awards, best picture, best director, best screenplay, best actor, best actress.
Huge.
And that hasn't, it's only happened, that's only happened three times in Oscar history. And it happened with One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest in 1975, but it hasn't happened since.
And they, two thumbs down.
I think it was two,
At least one.
It was at least one thumbs down. But Silence of the Lambs, interestingly, for That's an interesting first
yeah, yeah.
date.
I love throwing you curveballs once in a while. I started with Stripes and I'll end with Silence of the
took
Lambs.
A girl on a date to a first date in 96 to From Dusk Till Dawn. Not the best first date movie.
No, right.
But back to Silence of the Lambs for a moment. Exceptionally good movie.
It's amazing.
One that I can't bring myself to go back and rewatch.
I agree with you. It's so much.
It's too much.
It's so
it's
heavy.
It's too much.
I'm glad that I've watched it. I probably watched it twice.
Yeah, I've seen it in its entirety two times.
I don't know if I want to do it either.
I'll start it a few times, and then once we get to the... I'm not even going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating, because if you look at the sequel Hannibal, which came out in 2000, which I saw in the theater,
uh-huh.
I'll never watch that one again. Not because, and I don't think it's near as good as Silence of the Lambs, but it was also too much.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
too much. But Silence of the Lambs is, I mean,
what else? There's nothing we could say. It's that good. It's that deep, that heavy.
Again.
It's everything.
But you bring up a perfect example of a movie R-rated, certainly made for adults, very financially successful at the box office, and wins all the awards. When the hell does that ever happen?
An original, right? Maybe it's a book.
Well, it's actually the second book. So it was written by Thomas Harris. The first book was called Red Dragon.
Oh yeah, and they did that.
They did that in 86. A movie called Manhunter, which was directed by Michael Mann.
There you go.
Yeah. Speaking
of
Michael,
we just saw that.
Michael Mann.
Other movie you told me about, yeah. I watched
yeah.
that
yeah.
Michael Mann did.
Yeah.
Ferrari.
So technically speaking, Silence of the Lambs was a sequel.
Wow.
In 91 when it came out. On a technical level.
Okay.
It was a sequel.
Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Lambs. See,
so,
Lambs, yeah. too.
So,
there's two. Silence of the Lambs.
So you've got Manhunter, comes out 85 or 86, maybe 86.
Okay.
I don't have any notes in front of me. And then after Silence of the Lambs, the studio goes to the author, Thomas Harris, and says, we need a sequel. We need a sequel to this. He says, I'm not interested. Well, we're going to make this with or without you. So he goes and writes the book Hannibal. All right.
Oh, okay.
And then he writes another book called Hannibal Rising, which was about the origin story of Hannibal Lecter.
No, thanks.
I don't know if you saw that movie. It's like 2007. No. Terrible.
How many? This is when you know you got a good movie.
Yeah.
How many other movies have something that's in that movie that they've either made fun of or put in something from Silence of the Lambs?
The Mask.
Tons.
Yeah.
Tons. Oh yeah. Mask with the bacon.
Absolutely.
But Silence of the Lambs had the something is in that was in that movie is in another movie like.
A
lot, right?
Yeah, I mean, it nailed it. You nailed it. So, Bill, I think we're going to make this a reoccurring series.
I love it.
When movies were movies. And I would like to invite you, the listener, to chime in on the conversation. Email thedanabucklershow@gmail.com. Put when movies were movies. And we want to hear your recommendations. The only criteria is 70s, 80s, 90s. That's it. Tell us when movies were movies. We'll read your answers on the air.
Yeah, give me a few. I'll watch them. I love recommendations.
All right, Bill. My friend, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was a great conversation. Thank you. Again, this was an emergency episode. You came rather quickly. I called you. It was like putting the bat signal out.
I'm here
for
you.
I put the podcast microphone up in the air, up in the sky, and you were here.
It's just a silhouette of a microphone. So, Dana, I'm always here for you. You know that.
I appreciate it.
I'm here for the listeners too. Send me a message. Yeah. I'd love to hear from you guys.
Absolutely. So you can follow the show on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Dana Buckler Show. I am on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Dana Buckler. Also on Instagram at The Dana Buckler. And on Instagram at The Dana Buckler Show. Once again, the email address, thedanabucklershow@gmail.com. And if people want to follow you on any social media,
can I say the YouTube thing now?
Please.
So I started a YouTube channel to follow my golf group guys, and we made 5 episodes of a docuseries.
They're exceptionally made.
Dana's on it. If you're a fan of Dana, he's on my show.
I'm telling you right now, this is HBO sports level quality.
We're trying. We have a crew of two, but we're We're trying. We had fun.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
Am I on there like my introduction?
Yes, you remember?
With the pipe? That's yeah. on YouTube?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Yes. Oh, shit. Am I yeah. allowed to say that?
Yeah, that's fine.
No, Dana intros the docuseries.
Oh, my God.
And
I
then
sure
we did that other like 10-second clip where you're in the final episode yeah. where you say, I haven't seen this much tension since Liv left started the PGA Tour. but our famous line that we wrote together, at least famous in our group, is the Turnpike Cup has 24 players and 23 wives.
Yeah.
so that continues to have life. But anyway, you can look up my name, Bill Searcy, S-E-A-R-C-Y on YouTube, and you can find the Turnpike Cup stuff there, which Dana's on. So if you want to watch it, you can find Dana under me. And then I'm Dollar Bill Golf on TikTok. So I post a bunch of stupid videos of me drinking coffee.
I love it.
Yeah.
Love
so anyway,
it.
Thank you.
All right, guys. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Dana Buckler Show. Bill, once again, thank you. Always a pleasure to have you on. My name is Dana Buckler. This is the Dana Buckler Show. And thank you so much for listening.